So the first point today is that there is a race that we each have to run. And so in this passage, we see our lives compared to a race. So the race represents our lives and the calling God's given us in our lives. And I think there are some things about that race that are true for everyone, which is that we're all called to a life of faith and obedience, and we're all called to reflect God's image. There's a number of things about the race that are the same for all of us, and there's other things about the race that are specific to each of us and the calling that God's given to us specifically. But what I want to focus on today is just what this passage tells us is true about all of our races, what is consistent for every single one of us as we seek to run the race God's given to us in faith and obedience. And so one thing that jumps out immediately from this passage is that difficulties and distractions in the Christian life are a reality. The Christian life is not easy, and that's something that comes up very quickly, and that we see there are things that function as distractions in our race that seek to impede us from running the race in faith. And there are just, a lot of these are circumstances, and we'll get into the nature of what these are more, but things that we see in our lives that would naturally lead us to question, is God faithful? Are God's promises true because of this circumstance in my life? Or maybe it's more subtle than that. Maybe we don't specifically question, is God faithful? But this distraction that there is in our life draws our focus in and draws our focus away from Christ and his promises so that we're slowed down, these things that distract us. So the verse describes these distractions in a couple words. It says, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. I think we're a little bit more familiar with what sin is, but I just want to consider quickly, what are the weights? What are these weights the verse is talking about? And I think just based on the context in Hebrews, one thing that it wouldn't be far-fetched is to consider these weights as trials or trying circumstances that the listeners were facing or that we're facing as we read this passage today. Things that we deeply care about and that are not, like, they're not sins that are, but they're just circumstances in our lives that can consume our attention and distract us from that race we're running. Or it might be something else. A weight might be something that's not a sin, is not sinful, but it might be a habit or something we spend a lot of time on that just consumes, and it's not something that is wrong, but it's something that's slowing us down from the specific call God's given to us. Then the other word it uses is sins, and I think we're a little bit more familiar, but it describes the sins as sins that easily entangle or cling so closely or beset us. There's a number of translations of that description there, but I think this is a little easier to understand. These things that pop up in our life time and again that slow us down, and I'm sure each of us has something that's coming to mind right now. I know what these sins are for me. They're things that I look at, I see, oh, here it comes again. Am I really falling into this sin again? It could be a number of things for different people, but you might be, oh, am I being impatient with my family again? Am I struggling with anxiety again today like I was last week and last year and the years before that? But it's these things that consistently come up and distract us. So how do we respond to these distractions? What do we do when we see these sins and these trials in our lives coming up time and again? And the verse gives us a couple things to look. It says, lay them aside and run with endurance. And we still have the question, how do we do that? How do we endure in the race where there are these sins trying to tangle our feet and trying to slow us down? Well, there's one aspect I believe that the verse tells us. There is a conscious act of setting aside or laying aside these weights. And I think if we look a little further in chapter 12, we see in verses 12 and 13 where it says, lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees and make straight paths for your feet. So there is this element where we are consciously choosing to set aside these things in our minds and our hearts, focus on something other than the sins and distractions. But it still leaves us with the question, where does the power to do that come from? And I think what is so very, very important from this verse is that the verse doesn't say you can set aside the distractions just by looking at the next step and trying to untangle your own feet, or by saying, okay, sin's really not worth it anyway, so let me just take the next step, you'll be good to go. That's not what the verse says. Although those things might be true, that sin is not worth it, the greatest inspiration, the greatest power, and the greatest encouragement to lay aside the distractions and weights comes not from anything within ourselves, but it comes from looking outside of ourselves. And I just want to consider, where do we look? Where do we look outside of ourselves to get power to keep running our race in spite of these distractions? Well, if we look back at the very first verse in chapter 12, it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also. So one of the places we're called to look by this verse are to the witnesses. Who are the witnesses? What are they witnesses to? And how do they inspire us? So the witnesses, you may or may not already know that this term is referring to those men and women in chapter 11 that they describes their lives. It describes their races, and what their distinguishing characteristic is faith. The nature of their faith is described in 11 verse 1, where it says, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. And their faith is further described in verse 6, where it says, without faith it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. And so this is their distinguishing characteristic, and as their stories are told in chapter 11, we see that real faith affects their lives, and that's true for us too. Real faith affects our lives, and that when we have faith, we have conviction of God's promises. It's grabbing hold of the promise and living in the good of the promise, and that's what these men and women did. And in verses 33 through 37, it describes to us some of the things they were able to accomplish because of the faith they had. It says they conquered kingdoms, they enforced justice, they obtained promises, and it goes on. And it says they did this in spite of the things that they faced, which included flogging, imprisonment, being stoned, being sawn into, trials and circumstances that are probably far more difficult than anything we're dealing with in our lives right now. But because they lived in the good of the promise, because they, it says about Moses that he looked to the invisible, because they looked to God and his promise and held on to that, they were able to run their race with endurance, and God gave them the strength. And we're called in this chapter to also run like these witnesses. But here's what's so amazing is that the witnesses aren't our greatest example, and they're an amazing example, but even what they look to, we have something better. That's what chapter 11, verse 39 and 40 tell us. It says, all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. And what is that referring to? What do we have that's better? And I think this is the crux of the passage, and it's also point three, which is there is a pioneer and perfecter of our faith who empowers us to run. So the examples inspire us, but they're not ultimately the ones we are to look to focus on with all our energy. We are called in this passage to look to Jesus, or as the NIV puts it, as we are called to fix our eyes on him. And I really like that translation, just because that idea of fixing our eyes is so clear. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Why is it better to fix our eyes on Jesus than anyone else? And I think we can kind of learn about and be taught and reminded why it's better by some of the ways it describes Jesus in this passage. He's described as the founder, or in another translation, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. And so what does it mean to look to him? We don't have a physical Jesus next to us, so how do we look to him right now in our circumstances, in our race? Well, I think this has an element of a reliance and trust in a consistent way. But specifically, let's think about how it is better to look to him than anyone else. And that term pioneer or founder, I think it has a couple of different, as I read about what that term meant, there's a couple of different aspects of it. And one aspect is that Jesus, as the pioneer of our faith, is the best example, the ultimate example of faith. So a pioneer is someone, what that means is a forerunner who goes before, shows you the way, how do you walk? And so Jesus is the ultimate example of how to walk, how to run in a life of faith. You might ask, where did Jesus show faith or trust in God in spite of his circumstances? Well, I think that's as most clear in the path he took from Gethsemane all the way leading up to the cross, and how he completely trusted God. How did he, when he was hanging on the cross and men yelled, he trusts in God, let God deliver him now if he desires him, how did he, in the face of that opposition, remain silent? How did he endure in his race? Well, it says in this passage that it's because of the joy. He was looking to the joy set before him. And I think that has a lot to do with looking to the reward and the promise, just trusting God in that circumstance. So Jesus perfectly endured. He never failed in his endurance. And because of that, he's the ultimate example of a life of faith for us as we run. But more than that, as a pioneer, he's not only the ultimate example, he's also the one who makes our faith possible in the first place. A pioneer is also, I guess we can think of Jesus as a pioneer in the sense that he's blazing forward a trail of hope that we wouldn't have otherwise. And in that sense, he founds our faith. So that's where the word founder, I think, can be really helpful, is that he makes it possible in the first place. He's the one who initiates it based on his fulfillment of all God's redemptive promises. And my favorite part about why Jesus is better is that he perfects our faith. And I think that could be a little confusing. What does that mean, that he perfects our faith? Well, looking at other parts of Hebrews has helped me a little bit to understand that. So I want to consider that the other places in Hebrews where it says that Jesus was made perfect, there's one occurrence of that is in Hebrews 5, where it says, although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. And I think that description of Jesus being made perfect isn't saying that Jesus went from being imperfect to perfect, but rather, like this verse says, that he learned obedience in his own race, in his own test. And so he showed himself to be perfect, and in doing so, became the one who was perfectly able to fulfill all God's promises, and ultimately to allow us, like it says in Hebrews 10:22, to draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. And because he showed himself to be perfect, he could perfectly give us full assurance of faith and clean consciences. And that's why he's the perfecter of our faith, because he perfectly endured where we failed. And he has become the fulfillment of all God's promises to us. And so that's a crucial aspect in looking to Jesus, is remembering how he founded and perfected our faith. And there's one last thing I want to look at in terms of Jesus being the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, and that's to consider how Jesus looks to the reward and how that affects how we also look to a reward. When Jesus perfected our faith, he conquered death. And it says in Hebrews 2 that he's bringing many sons to glory. Because of what Jesus did when he perfected our faith and conquered death, he also makes the reality of Psalm 8 it's possible for Psalm 8 to be realized, where it says, and it's quoted earlier in Hebrews 2, where it says, what is man that you are mindful of him? But then it also says that you have crowned him with glory and honor. And that's the promise that God will bring many sons to glory is something that we can look to, because Jesus has gone before us and perfected our faith. Jesus, when he was enduring, as it says in this verse, he says he did it for the joy that was set before him. And I'm not sure all that that entails, but I think part of that is described here, where it says, now he's seated at the right hand of the throne of God. He is in glory, and he is interceding for us right now. But he's also a pioneer, and he is bringing many sons to glory. So we have something to look forward to as we run. And that's another element of what it means to look to Jesus. We have life eternal and in glory with Jesus to look forward to. And that's possibly the most amazing thing to look forward to of all, is eternal hope and glory with Jesus, our Savior. And looking on his glory and continuing to fix our eyes on him throughout all eternity. So in light of this, let us run, friends. Let us be singularly focused on, motivated by, and empowered by Christ in our race. And as we endure, whatever it is today that's functioning as a distraction or something that impedes you, if it's that sin that's came up again this week with your family, or whatever sin that might be, if it's something that's trying a circumstance in your life, consider Jesus. We would do very well in our next step to consider what our next step is, to remember that we are called in this verse to fix our eyes on him who endured and persevered and trusted in spite of the greatest pain and the greatest trying circumstance, and who endured perfectly and obediently where we failed, and in so doing, made promises of joy and glory for us possible who believe in him. So let's fix our eyes on him and remember that a focus on the founder and perfecter of our faith is the only thing that can truly empower us to run the challenging race set before us.